Hey, folks. Welcome to the Pro Edge Podcast. I'm Conrad. I'm sitting next to the very handsome Tim Meyer. I heard he's available, ladies. If you need his number, it's at the men's room at the Flying J out in Caldwell.
Second stall. Third stall's my old number.
Wait a minute. Is that how I met you?
Yeah.
I think so.
You met me in the third stall.
We're business partners now. It was more than just some kind of cheap lot lizard transaction. We're sitting across from Fish, former Navy SEAL, 9 years. Had a super good conversation. He was here to talk about Intrepid Clothing Co., intrepidclothingco.com. It's a veteran-owned company. What's unique about his business and why we wanted to have him on is with t-shirt sales or any type of product, we sell our Pro Edge nutrition company. There's usually a story behind it. Each shirt that he creates has a story behind it, and you can research what that story is. But the principles of the company and why it was founded, him being a Navy SEAL, it kind of all ties in together, and it's unique. So if you like shit that's different, if you like craft brands, I would strongly suggest you guys go to intrepidclothing.co.com and order a shirt, show some support. It's a veteran-owned business. We had a conversation about what it takes to, you know, be a Navy SEAL. He went into what it was like being an instructor in BUDS in Phase 1. We talked about phony Navy SEALs. If you're listening to this and someone's told you they're a Navy SEAL, fucking contact Don Shipley. You can email him or call him directly. I found him on YouTube. I love him. All they do is they bust phony Navy SEALs. They're out everywhere. So be sure to do that if someone does tell you they're a Navy SEAL. So we got to have a conversation with them about swimming, about guns, about clothing. It was fucking cool. Like to put a shout out to our sponsors. First off, Jack's Nutrition. If you guys are fat as fuck, get on down to Jack's Nutrition. See Steve and Dustin. They've been in the industry 25 years. Dustin can hook you up with Met Meals, $6.50 for a small. I want to say a large is $7.50 or $8.50. Point being, the food's different. You get to choose the items. It's healthy. Whether you're looking to put on muscle, whether you're looking to cut, Dustin and Steve can hook you up. It's the only meal prep meal program, too, where you have a variety of options. So that just means if they're doing tuna that day, they also have two other selections. So you don't have to have the tuna casserole or whatever the fuck some of the other ones do. So you have selection there. Also, when you go into Jack's, they take a special interest in what products you're putting in your body. They actually understand it. They don't sell any bullshit from China. Everything you're going to get in there is going to be FDA approved. They're going to be able to tell you. They're not going to oversell you. A lot of times you'll go into these places. They throw sales reps on you that's 19 years old, that's obviously he's got Winstrol leaking out of his eyeballs, and he wants to tell you what you need for your body. And that's not the way to do it. Go to Jack's, see the professionals. They'll hook you up. If you're police and fire, police, fire, or military, mention that when you're in there, and they're going to hook you up with a discount. So, again, that's Steve and Dustin down at Jack's Nutrition. Also, shout out to Muse Tattoo on Main Street Meridian. See my man Cody Lee, super good tattoo artist. He'll ink you up and then throw you in a guillotine. I think he rolls with the Rhino guys over there off of Cherry. Blue belt. So Cody Lee down at Muse Tattoo. Tim, could you tell them a little bit about Pro Edge Nutrition and that badass formula you developed, right, yourself from years of experience, folks, in the industry? Craft blend.
I'll keep it quick for everybody because I don't want to get too crazy. But we've got a stimulant free volumizer. It's got the full array of your arginine. So you're getting your precursor, you're getting your agmatine sulfate, getting your citrulline, you're getting your arginine, alpha-ketoglutarate, and then we got some glutamine for some small intestine uptake on your aminos, some creatinola phosphate to slow that lactic acid buildup. So stack it with anything that you'd like. Again, it's stimulant-free. We've also got an endurance blend, so it's got 20 grams of carbs. And then you've also got some phenylethylamine and some caffeine, some B12, some taurine. So essentially, you're getting more of an adrenaline rush. So your noradrenaline, your adrenaline, norepinephrine, dopamine. going to spike with no crash, and it's going to be a very clean, focused workout. Swing by Jack's Nutrition, they're very limited. So the first or the next, what, five people who buy it will be like the last five people to have it for a while.
Yeah.
But cool.
All right, well, enjoy the episode.
Thanks for listening in.
Peace. All right, Travis, welcome to the Pro Edge Podcast.
Thanks.
Been talking to you a couple months now. Really wanted to get someone in your field that's been in your line of work on the podcast. We try to do a big portion of what we do for our military audience and for veterans and stuff like that. So super stoked to have you on finally. If you could just tell our audience who you are, what you did, what you do now, and where they can get your badass t-shirts at. And I got one over there. And for anyone listening in the into physical fitness community, his shirts, like if you like to work out, if you're a dude, they fit great. They're soft. They're kind of like a good bodybuilder style. They just sit on you nice and they're soft. And if you got muscle tone, they show them well. So really slick designs too. So super impressed with the shirts.
Sweet, thank you. And thanks, guys, for having me. Stoked to be here for sure. My name is Travis Fishburne. Everyone calls me Fish. Don't even bother calling me Travis because nobody does it, and I probably won't listen to you anyways. Been out of the Navy since 2012. Moved back to Boise 2014. In school last semester for my degree in psychology. Launched a clothing company this year called Intrepid Clothing Co. And now I'm here doing a podcast.
Right on. So, Intrepid Clothing Company, what are the, I mean, kind of what's your mission statement behind the company? I know there is one. I did a little research, but could you describe that to us and what it means to you and why it's important?
For sure. With our style and our mission statement, we are going with a different type of brand, meaning it's just not another t-shirt with some logos printed on it. Behind Intrepid, it's about chasing your goals and dreams. It's about being bold and adventurous, living your life the way you want to live it. It's about being unafraid to take those risks for the greater reward, whether it's in your personal life, your relationships, your schooling, your education, future jobs. It's about taking that and living your life to the fullest and reaching those goals and dreams that you want. I'm a big believer in this world that you can have anything you want, whether it's, you know, physical items to education to, you know, any type of job. You really can if you put in the time and effort. And that's what we're trying to do with Intrepid, is believe in that and live that type of lifestyle. And then the designs behind it will have a story. So they're a real story with a real person, a real adventure, a real lifestyle. So now we're starting to share other people's stories around the world, so that other people can get inspiration from it, or other people can see that, hey, this person went through this trial of tribulation, or this person conquered this great goal or this great fear, and now we will tell their story online and through the shirt designs.
Awesome. So Navy SEAL, obviously, you know, you know how to work through things. Who do you use to get inspired?
With the clothing company, it came from Forge Clothing out of California. Two of my Navy SEAL buddies, Ryan Williams and Mike Sowers, first started the company. And now a new Ryan has stepped into the secondary role and with Mike. Forge was the original company and voice behind my inspiration. I thought it was super cool to see people wearing their gear down the street, just strangers, you know, and would stop and talk to them and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually, 10 years later, they have blown up into something way more than just, you know, a t-shirt and a brand. It's beyond a brand now. It is a true lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah, and I've seen it out there, which says something, right? Yeah. Being from Idaho and knowing who they are and their clothing line. So where else? So I think we often think of guys that achieve. Oops, sorry, some technical difficulties. Stuff like getting through Bud's training or something like that. We often forget that, you know, they're human. They have a lot of doubts in themselves. So, where do you pull inspiration for stuff like that, for that adventurous risk-taking you're kind of talking about? Who's been some inspirations in your life?
Well, taking any type of risk or adventure, that's kind of where it all started from when I was like 12, wanting to be a Navy SEAL. That just was in my blood to begin with. But growing up, my father was Australian national champion on the pentathlon team. My brother played soccer, my sister did. Our family was very involved with sports anything outdoors. So from my childhood, for me, that's personally where it probably stems from or at least starts from. In my own life, that probably really ramped up going through Buds and SEAL training and meeting other men just like me and then hearing their stories and then the nonstop competition coming into play and then the nonstop wanting to be first place on everything, you know, no matter what you do. So I think that as a whole really inspires me to want to be better and want to compete with other people in general throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, you know, in a good fashion.
Yeah, competition can be healthy, but if you take it in the wrong dose, it could also be lethal. To a lot of things. So you were on SEAL Team 7?
Correct,
and that's a West Coast team?
Mm-hmm.
And you were, I want to say I read about this, an instructor in Phase 1?
Correct.
Okay, and could you describe, is there three phases? Or
in Buds there is. Buds
okay,
first,
and so
third.
What is Phase 1? Is that just like the slap their balls against the wall as many times as you can and get as many to quit until you get them into two?
You
could start the real training.
You could say that. It's definitely the basic level of training. We want to weed out the weak ones early, but we're also still teaching them the basics of the process to become a frogman, meaning underwater knot tying, underwater swimming, drown proofing, a lot of basic conditioning. We're testing their physical limits through running, swimming, O courses, rucksack runs, things of that nature. But it's since it is first phase, we do ramp up the training fast and hard, and that's where you do see most of the numbers drop, because as you get to second and third phase, that's even as a new student, that's when the training's still ramping up very fast, with the underwater rebreathers. Then you're going to third phase demolition and shooting and moving. Those tactics can be very aggressive even for a new student.
Yeah.
So first phase, you do want to weed out at least the weak ones, or the ones that aren't mentally prepared or physically prepared, and you can figure those out pretty quick.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. You don't think about it like that, but when you guys get to Buds, you're basically a seaman apprentice or a seaman or whatever rating you were in the Navy, and you were trained as a mechanic or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like as far as live demolitions training and moving and clearing rooms with live ammo, that's a long process to get there. And you guys got, is it 6 months to kind of get
Buds
all that?
About 6 months total. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're doing underwater and demos. You could spend 6 months on demo alone, but so, Buds is kind of like that. Get you dressed to get to the teams. Is teams kind of where your field training comes in?
Well, Buds is just the first step. There's basically two big steps before you even become a frogman.
Okay.
And the second step of that is SQT, SEAL qualification training, and that's in another 6 months. And in between there, I think they've changed the schedule. In between there, now you have jump school. So you'll go static line and free fall as part of that SQT platform.
Okay, cool. Now, so
I could be mistaken. I've been out a couple of years, but I believe that's how it is.
And once you're in SQT, is the fear of what? Like, at that point, they know the dude's hard. They're going to get him through training unless it's some kind of, like, medical thing, right?
Sure, sure. 99% of the time, it's just We're treating them like men now. We're training them like to become SEALs. So we need top-notch training. You still get some bad apples in there, so they can still be dropped.
But they got to be pursuing it almost.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, I've seen guys like that. Way milder training, of course, but yeah. You always get the ass clowns in the group.
It happens in every branch. We definitely have them, and guys still make it that are ass clowns, you know, and eventually some of them still get their bird pulled and kicked out, you know, and that's unfortunate for many reasons and for everyone, but in the long run, it's the best thing for the units and for the teams because we're going to war, and we're dealing with people's lives, you know, and your buddy's life next to you, so that's not a time to gamble.
Yeah, exactly. Have you tried anything since you've left the teams to kind of stay? Do you do anything now to keep your lifestyle, adrenaline, that adventure? That's pretty hard to top, right?
Yeah. I would say my adrenaline has calmed down quite a bit to a mild level. I mean, I have a muscle car. I like to drive fast sometimes, but that's
a beautiful car, too.
Thanks. That barely scratches the surface, you know. So
tell us a little bit about that thing.
Her name's Lois Lane. She's a 70 Chevelle Super Sport. I built probably 60-70% of her. And had her since about circa 2007.
Right on. What do you got under the hood?
That's a 383 stroker with 150 shot of nitrous.
Whew. So she skates.
She skates. She moves. She will move.
Nice. My stepdad, when I was a kid, he restored classic cars for a living and raced. Still races them. But he did like a lot of like 57 Bel Airs with Continental kits for off the showroom.
Bel Air's top car of mine.
And he traded in muscle cars. He's got a shop full of them. It's insane. You'd walk in there and be like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's a big hobby of mine for sure.
Super jealous. He's been a car dude his entire life. He started racing and selling cars when he was in high school and then started building hot rods, and that's all he's ever done.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I appreciate a good muscle car, especially nowadays. We're kind of, Ford and Chevy's kind of revamped their muscle car race a little bit. It's gotten better.
Sure. Dodge especially.
Yeah, Dodge too.
They have stepped up their game.
Yeah, they've, what's the one, the Bumblebee? Is that what it's called?
That one's the Camaro, I believe, and then they have the Challenger, the Charger.
Well, there's a Challenger. Is it a Yellow Jacket? It's one with like a 396 that's just built to the nuts. And I think it's got like 780 horsepower or something.
Right. That's out the box. That's impressive.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I wanted to say it had like some kind of Hornet or Bee nickname or something. Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm more of a Chevy guy when it comes to that, but they are impressive for sure.
Yeah, how about trucks? What do you want to?
Trucks, I'm a Toyota Tundra type guy for now.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
I was a Chevy truck guy, but once I test drove the Tundra, I was thoroughly impressed.
Yeah.
I like the room. I like how spacious it is. It performs extremely well. Resale value still holds pretty good, so I hear.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. I think one of the best, actually, besides Chevy. I grew up a Ford. I always liked Fords, Mustangs, so I was always considered myself a Ford dude and Ford trucks and but I own Chevy trucks, and I eventually switched to Chevy trucks. So I like Chevy trucks. They just do it right, for sure. Something about a Silverado, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I've looked at those a lot.
Yeah, I just love a good... you don't see any mid-90s ones fixed up. I had one.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty dope. It was done right, and I had 240,000 miles on it. Still ran like a top. It was
if you build them right, they'll last forever.
Yeah, you couldn't kill those old Vortex, but you don't see many of them around anymore.
Not really.
But if you see a '90s truck, it's probably a Chevy one or a Toyota.
Yeah,
for sure. Because I think most of the Fords and Dodges from the '90s are
some of those cars are coming up on classics, right? What's considered a classic? 30 years?
30 years. Yeah.
I'm building a 79 Scout 2 right now.
How fucking scary is that?
That's cool.
And that sucker's, she's...
A Scout 2?
Mm-hmm.
79?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to introduce you to my buddy Dan Seiss. He's actually been on the show. He's a big Scout dude. And he's super, like everyone that listens to the podcast always talks about Dan. Mm-hmm. They want to meet Dan.
He's an interesting guy.
He's really cool. I was in the National Guard with him forever. Like he was in my unit for 9 years. But like his story is insane. He drops out of high school. He's doing like LSD and playing in bands. Joins the Army. Goes, you know, in the initial push in the Gulf War as a combat engineer with 1st ID. I think they were attached to the Ranger Battalion. I'd have to ask him again. Anyway, like a self-taught historian, married an Iranian woman, fluent in like Middle Eastern language, just a super, like a survivalist, can operate and build all kinds of geeky radios to do signals when the nuclear apocalypse happens.
Sure.
Just like a Jeet Kune Do instructor for 25 years that trained under the last guy that trained under Bruce Lee. Like just the guy's like the most interesting man in the world.
Have to get a Dos Equis with them.
Yeah. Andy's like I was gonna say because
we should have both you guys in here. Just geek
my,
out.
Yeah, my dad was.
He's fun to geek
had
out
a scout,
with.
And so I used to talk. And Dan's always working on his.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, I'm pretty close. I dropped in my motor, but a company here in town kind of screwed up the engine mounts, which I'm not going to say who because they're gonna fix it. You could be up and running here in about a month, maybe.
You know what? I'm an idiot. I got referred to you from Dan. You've met Dan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was over some scout parts or something.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that you guys were talking military stuff, because I asked him, we were talking about, I was trying to get a hold of someone that we were over there with, and I couldn't, and he mentioned you. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I circled I'll back to around ref- to that. I'll have to I could, my memory. And it was over a scout. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think you guys were talking scout parts or something. Cool. At a parts store, maybe? I don't know. But it's a
small world.
Yeah.
We're like best friends. I'm like, what's his name again?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it is nowadays, though. Like, I know, as I get older, I guess, like, I forget a lot of people's names.
Well, I've been doing
last like,
names.
Yeah, I know somebody who does this or that, and then I can always post. I can usually pull them up online.
Yeah.
They're a lot of times they're like, yeah, that's my friend. But it's like, no, we're friends on Facebook, and I see that he posts a bunch of shit about that thing. Right. So, yeah.
But. I'm pretty bad with names.
I'm so like, bad with names.
Well, yeah, for me, I just do last names or nicknames. So that's why I said, like, people don't use Travis ever. Mm-hmm. So don't even bother, like, saying it. Mm-hmm.
So do you, just curious, do you still, I think I was texting you this the other day, but, like, do you still swim at all?
I haven't recently, no, but I'm looking at getting back into it actually this semester for school because I can use Boise State's pool.
Oh, nice.
I've been biking and running a buttload, so I'm thinking, highly thinking about doing maybe half an Ironman come next year and maybe some just sprint triathlons and stuff. The last couple years, I've just been in beefcake mode and wanted to be over 200 pounds and hold that weight, and for my size, that's a lot of weight to carry around.
Yeah, no,
it's hard to maintain.
I've been battling.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a 185 to 190 guy, so 200 to 205 was good for me in the sense that I wanted that size, but you know, I wasn't running more than 25 feet to anywhere.
Yeah,
and now I'm back to like 190. You know, running and biking almost daily, and just trying to get my conditioning back up.
Right on. Yeah, I'd like to do some swimming. I've been hitting the pool. I was doing an old workout. When I was in the Coast Guard, I was in Brunswick, Georgia, and they have the FLETC there, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and they do like ATF, a bunch of guys there. But we had access to their facility, and they had an Olympic pool. Mm. And a lot of their instructors were PJs that retired out of Valdosta Air Base. And so they showed us some of their swim workouts, and we'd go work out with them. And I always had an awesome time. And I was in fucking super good shape when I was doing that, like unbelievable. I could eat anything I wanted, and yeah,
it wouldn't matter. But nowadays,
I remember one I'd like to do it again was like you do 30 seconds above water, and then you do the length of the pool 30 30s, and you do that 30 times. That was one. I never got the lung capacity to do it that many times. I think I got it like 12 once.
Sure. It takes a lot of practice to that. I mean, swimming in general, but if you're starting to do breath hold techniques and like the 50-meter underwater and whatnot, like, yeah, it takes a while to build that capacity for your lungs to handle it.
Is that where guys wash out in buds is always in the water usually?
A lot of them would what we call it, red line. Yeah, they would just black out. A lot of that has to, well, some of it has to deal with them – I don't know, maybe not having the lung capacity at the time, but some of it has to do with the instructors ramping up the atmosphere and making students maybe uneasy or a little nervous, and we want to see how you react to that. Can you calm yourself down? Can you still perform if pressure's on?
Right.
And that's these are the early stages we want to test that at. So that's one of the things, you know, if you don't make it the first time, okay, you have like three more chances before we roll you or drop you. So we take all that into consideration and look at the big picture too, but we need to see that you can perform under pressure.
Yeah, and do you guys swim in the drink quite a bit out there, like on in the ocean? Do they do a lot of that out in the live ocean?
They don't. We don't do ever like drown-proofing or underwater night tearing anything there because we have to be able to see the student and watch them, especially the 50-meter. That's quite dangerous, and I don't recommend anyone ever doing it without doing the 50-meter underwater without proper supervision. It's extremely dangerous because you can black out, and then you'll die.
Yeah, okay. That's crazy. How far... I was curious on how far they actually, you guys can do like ocean swims. Do you do any long distance ones in Bud, or do you guys do that for training, like a SEAL day where you go out and you're like, hey, we're going to swim 5 miles, swim the channel or something?
Each phase you will do two nautical mile swims. And then third phase you have a 7.5 nautical mile swim, I believe. But yeah, every phase you have your swims. That's part of this, the curriculum and physical training.
Huh. I had a buddy from Daytona Beach, Steve Chopek. I talked about his dad. His dad got a Purple Heart in Vietnam, and he was talking about Forrest Gump was the most realistic Vietnam movie out there. He was in the 4th Infantry Division as a grunt. Anyway, Steve went to a rescue swimmer school for the Coast Guard and had a fucking stroke swimming a channel. And I was shocked because I think he was 28 or 29, and he was pretty bulletproof. But, yeah, that was pretty young. I'm like, God, they must have really been whooping your ass. But I think he – I don't know. It's hard to say. You get that far out in the water.
Yeah, if you have a medical issue, you're going to be in some trouble. We would always – we would have our safety swimmers with them or guys on jet skis too, you know.
Okay.
And then you always have safety boats. We have like 3 or 4 safety boats plus 2 dudes on jet skis. So safety is always paramount, and safety is always the number one thing we look at during every evolution, you know. When you are pushing the envelope and pushing that fine line of what's too much, what's not enough, but you have to push the standards high to know what – current situations or real world issues are going to be, you have to toe that line often to get that full training you need and experience. And it's a dangerous game you play.
Right.
But safety always has to come first.
Right. And then, yeah, there's a lot of shit that can go wrong. What's the most dangerous part of Buds, you think? Is probably just the water training?
Yeah, I would say it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, some guys, you know, are collegiate swimmers, come in and they're amazing. Doesn't give them issues. But say the O course can, where it's agility more so. Or some guys have issues running, you know, but they can do other things well. I think it comes down to the individual and how well they've prepared themselves and just who they are as an overall maybe athlete.
Physically and mentally.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I think like a lot of guys mentally have issues.
Yeah.
That's something that I don't think people know how to train or do train it. So when you have a guy that's amazing in all physical activities.
But no discipline maybe.
Sure, discipline or once you start getting people cold. I mean, that's has nothing to do with like an actual physical strength necessarily. But you're laying there in the water, you're freezing your butt off, and you have sand in your eyes, you know, your biceps aren't going to save you, or your 5-minute mile is not going to save you right now.
Yeah.
You know, in those moments, that's where I think the mental strength comes into play.
The do or die moments. So I don't even know how the hell I found this, but I was on YouTube. I've seen the Stolen Valor stuff before, like on Facebook or whatever, and you're like, oh yeah, what a fucking jerk off.
Sure.
Because you can see guys wearing these. It's usually almost entertaining because they're such clowns. And then I had, I guess I if you would have asked me like 6 weeks ago or whatever, if I would have thought of that, I'd probably, oh yeah, sure, someone's doing that. I had no idea how many guys are stealing Navy SEAL Valor, and they're doing it not like as clowns, but they're on the news, they're speaking to churches, they're doing all kinds of shit. I found that show with Don Shipley, and I ended up donating to it the $10 because I think it's a good thing.
Sure,
I really do.
I think across the board, all service members are getting you know, their valor stolen.
Yeah.
And that is quite a despicable thing to do, you know, and it's disgraceful, I think.
There's quite a few guys that he busts. I'd say, you know, a good 80% of them, it seems like, that are prior service Navy or prior service something. And but then, when he pulls their records, it's what's great. They're all shitbags, like career E3s and, you know, just total. They were in 2 months or some bullshit. But I was shocked. Like, dude's got, like, legit shadow boxes. They're telling stories.
Have every medal in the world on their chest. Having the wrong order. Upside down shit.
Oh, man. And what's crazy is the, without really any probing of who they're on the phone with, they just start going off into left field with these ridiculous stories. Like, this one guy was saying, oh, we brought this pig in the room, and the Muslims started speaking after that, and that's how we interrogated them, and just all this goofy shit. And he's just sitting there like, ugh. But people really do that, and I think it's bullshit, because what they're doing, and it's only natural, when someone says, I'm a Navy SEAL, especially with a military background, if you're meeting that person, you automatically know, well, that person is squared away. Like, they're a professional. You know what I mean? And there's that instant
trust.
Most of us are.
Not everyone is.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Everyone's got some bad apples. But most part, it's kind of a trust thing. And people using that to leverage charity in most cases, and sympathy, and just some kind of an emotional draw. It's bullshit, but
it not only starts to affect everybody in that branch,
right?
Because then once people start taking advantage like that, then all those people that person affected, now they're going to think or probably assume all of us are like that,
right?
And that's also how it is in the military too. Say in the teams, if you have a few team guys that are acting up, doing some shitty things out in the real world or whatnot, then that starts looking bad on the whole community. So that's why we try to emphasize always that it's you have to be a full team player. You just can't be a great physical specimen or great at this or great at that. You also have to have, you know, honor and dignity on and off the battlefield.
Where
you're not taking advantage of people, or you're not just being a jackass, you know, because then that does affect the whole community. Everybody that person has contact with is now looking at us like we're a bunch of clowns, you know?
Yeah, and the number astounded me. The dude's doing like 25, he's busting 25 fake SEALs a day, minimum. There's that many people out there. That's insane if you think about. And he's like, people will answer the phone and be like, oh, I know who you are. And they'll still try to fucking lie to them. And I don't think, and some of them, even being in the military, are so fucking stupid with classifications. What makes them think that wouldn't be on record?
Yeah, it's easy to pull records.
It's a school. It's just a school. It's no different than going to learn how to turn wrenches on a boat. No?
Sure.
Yeah, same thing. Whether you're going to go to infantry school or learn how to bust tires on Humvees, it's the same classification as far as secret clearance. There isn't one on it.
I don't know anything about that stuff.
Dude, you should watch one of those shows. It's fucking entertaining. These guys and their stories, like, it's good. Another thing I always think's cool is when they put up the photos. A lot of these douche nozzles always have a photo in like a Kevlar, but like it's super suspect, like it's all black, and then they don't have a shirt on. And I'm like, how often has an operator, any branch, or a regular military guy taken his shirt off to go into combat or go on a training mission? First off, you're going to get called out for being a fucking idiot.
Well, who's got an all-black Kevlar vest?
Exactly.
I've never even seen one.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, I could go home and maybe spray paint mine.
So, but what he'll do is he'll show photos of these guys, and what really pisses me off is a lot of times they'll take a real photo, and some of these guys have died in accidents or in combat, and they'll steal their identity. Mm. And they'll, like, if, you know, but...
That's horrible. That's
super horrible. But some of them...
Is that illegal? Like,
yeah, there's a law against it.
You can be cited for that?
He's gotten a lot of people persecuted for it. He doesn't talk about it on the show, but I did a little research. I think, yeah, a lot of people have gotten in some hot water for it and should.
Like identity theft in that case, yeah. Or
one dude got a $300 million security contract in Africa, and he was a convicted felon. And he had investors and the whole fucking deal.
Wow.
Yeah, and he gets him to this, like first off, these fucking idiots that were never even in the service. Like, he doesn't know what he's getting himself into in a foreign country, let alone any type of diplomatic situation with a foreign government, and you're pulling security. Mm-hmm. Like, has no education, that manages to convince these investors and this company that he's the guy because he was on SEAL Team 6 and he's got all these fucking accolades, a forged DD-214 that looked legit. Like, it looked like my DD-214. And had all this shit, and it was all a fucking fairy tale. And I guess they started to get suspicious when he was, like, pretending to be on the phone with the CIA and when he was in Africa. And, you got to get me out of here. They're going to kill me. He was acting like a bitch, basically. And they're like, wait a minute. This guy was a badass Navy SEAL, and then some lady found out about Don Shipley and called him. And they're like, but that's how deep this guy. He had a weapons. Like, he was teaching people as a firearms instructor. That's, like, the second highest ranking one besides martial arts instructors. So, yeah, next time I'm in the gym, if I see some dude with a Trident on, I'll be like, what Buds class were you in?
No, dude.
On his gi. Class? Anyway, but, like, so this guy was out teaching people and on camera. Like, he was letting the fucking news film him.
And he was just...
A fat fucking slob. I mean, he had some technical weapon skills. He obviously had practice, but by no means did he look super sharp or look like
he'd been trained
an operator.
As an
ABC. Yeah. But that's how deep that guy got. Damn. And pulled it off.
You start a spiral of lies like that, and it's just going to continue. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you're going to get caught. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
I just don't understand, like, what he was thinking, trying to get a security contract in some fucking third world country that's ran by rebels. You're just barking up the wrong tree, dude. You're going to fail.
Yeah.
Miserably.
You'll get buried down there, and no one will blink an eye.
Yeah.
Bring two shovels. Fix that.
Yeah, there's a reason those fucking security places hire former guys.
Yeah.
Real former guys, not phonies.
Sometimes they don't know nowadays, though. Like you're saying, they're copying stuff. Like,
well, yeah, and to like a lot of people's credit that got duped. I mean, these guys were presenting themselves with some of them have pretty legit forged documents. Mm-hmm. To the average person that doesn't know anything about how the military operates, it'd be really hard to decipher. And some of these guys do their fucking research. Dude, this one dude, I have to talk about it, was so insane. He was on the phone telling Marcus Luttrell that he was that he marked him bad for freaking out in swim class or something. Like, he was one of Marcus's instructors. That's how big of a phony this guy was. Don Shipley got Marcus Luttrell on the phone, made up this whole story about the helicopter crash, the one you posted on, Extortion 17, and said it was I want to say he said it was he was on SEAL Team 5 and he was in the backup, like, just made all this shit up, and it was 10 that was out there wasn't even a West Coast team in the area. The dude was a total phony, but that's how far he went. He got on the phone with an actual SEAL and said, I was your instructor and fucking gave you a bad because you were struggling and swimming.
Delusional, man. People are delusional.
Mm-hmm. That's a sickness, right?
And those are the people who own guns. And they're not background checked, and they're crazy. They're the ones who, like, actually do go out, and they're like, they think they're in the military, right?
Well, no, like I said, a lot of them that he busts are prior service guys, but they were.
Oh, but I thought these were just 100% people who were not military.
No.
Some are.
Sure. Well, some are totally.
I knew
made up.
Some. I knew you were talking about some having been former military, and they're trying to live a more grandiose. experience.
There's a handful of guys he busts that did like 5 or 6 years or 15 years as a bosun's mate or
yeah,
as a
that's
fucking,
what you were saying.
And then they cop to it. They're like, I shouldn't have done it, blah, blah, blah. And those are rare. The majority of the guys that are prior service, the coincidence is they were complete shitbags. Mm. Like, you know, he looks at their real DD-14 and it's like, oh, he was promoted to E3 in 4 years. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a career shithead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just because, you know, to make E3 in 4 years, you got to be fucking up consistently because they give you E4.
So they just continue that lifestyle as soon as they're out.
Yeah.
Know? They just keep that train rolling.
Yeah. They like the attention.
It's super bad, dude. I was in...
It is a sickness, though, if you think about it.
I talked about it before. I worked with a guy. He was... Now, this is how fucking stupid he is. He's in my brigade. I'm working next to him. All the guys he deployed with, I know. The unit he was with, I know all of them. He's telling me these fucking war stories that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Dead serious. And he's claiming he was fraught. We turned him into the VA a couple times because he was trying to get disability. Piece of shit. I fucking hated that. And he was a soldier. And I fucking hated that. I think it's disgraceful.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people like that that get in the service too, man, and they milk it for everything it is, and I fucking hate it. Or they get out and they go commit a crime and they go, oh, I have PTSD. Really? Because you were a line cook at Golden Corral when you joined the National Guard, and then you were on a guard post. You fucking retard. You don't have post-traumatic, but they do that, and it makes us all look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you were just being a drunk asshole. How about that? Like, you got a coke problem, dick face. It's not that you have post-traumatic stress syndrome from being in the Army.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, my dad's talked about it because I think I've told you he's the clinical coordinator over at the VA.
Yeah, so, you know, it's super common when you get
system and stuff.
Dude, and it's too easy of a... It's super common for guys to fall into that pattern because it's like, oh, I fucked up with substances. Maybe if I put it on substance abuse or on the military and PTSD, people will give me a pass. But that's the wrong route to take. Now, there are cases where that happens. But I don't think people kind of understand the significance between substance abuse and the post-traumatic stress claims in society in general.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, no.
They're hand in hand. And I try to tell guys, I got super lucky. We watched some first ID guys get smoked by an EFP in front of us once because a general was late we were taking. But other than that, man, my deployment was super quiet. A lot of missions, but nothing crazy. But I had to babysit a kid that was in the infantry unit out of Montana, and their gun truck had got hit 3 times by EFPs, and you know how fucking violent those are. And not EFPs. They were just regular IEDs. Maybe one. I don't remember. Moral of the story was I had to babysit the kid when we were demobbing because he was literally physically and mentally like shell-shocked. There was something wrong with it. I didn't know what it was. Something definitely wrong with him. So it does exist. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that kid was faking. And, like, you know, I talked to his platoon leader. So just stuff like that. And then, but we got all these fucking assholes that want to draw from that. And because they put a uniform on, they'll do it.
Sure. They're the same type of people that do the Stolen Valor, you know?
Yeah.
They all fit in the same type of pool. You know, trying to steal what they can and lie about it or just suck from the system.
Manipulative. Very manipulative.
But that's how dumb, like that guy I worked with would literally lie to me about combat stories.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're a fucking mechanic.
Yeah.
Anyway. Crazy how that goes.
Yeah.
So, Intrepid Clothing, what's your goal for this upcoming year?
I'm going to try to do a few more events this summer and into the fall just to try to get my name out there. And then I'll probably launch one, maybe two designs for men, maybe one more design for females. Maybe something winterish, maybe a baseball-style T-shirt or maybe a sweater.
Baseball tee would be
cool.
I'll
show you one,
especially in that material. Can you get them in that material?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, Represent Clothing. They just did a baseball tee not too long ago, and I got it. I really like it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of guys are doing those, and I think they're dope.
Yeah, for sure.
Do they have different length tees? Because I've seen some that are, like, they're mid forearm, and then some that hit the elbow, and then do they make some that are even right below or right above the elbow?
I think I've seen two different styles of length. And usually what I do with that is I order several blanks in advance, and I try them on, and I fit them, and I see what the length is, and then I have other people try them on. Like, I've used my friends as models, like, nonstop, and just to get their feedback. And then once we decide on whatever's good, then I'll order that style of shirt.
Shit, we should hook you up with someone like that, or someone fighting on this Bellator card. That would be on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could be awesome.
Be way cool.
Yeah, I could introduce you to a couple MMA fighters. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple guys here that we've got a gal here, Vet Ortega, that's, you know, probably going to be fighting for a strap in Bellator. So she's gotten pretty big, and Bellator's gotten huge. They've got some talent pool there. We've got a... Dude, I think... I don't even know how many guys out of our gym are fighting on that card. There's like a handful.
Like four.
Steven, Andrew Cruz.
Kyle Frost.
Is Freddie?
Vita. I don't know about Freddie.
There's a bunch on our gym on that card.
So it's rolling into that. One of the steps that Intrepid's looking at doing is bringing on sponsored athletes.
Yeah.
I have an old coworker friend of mine who is the light heavyweight champion of the world at the Highland Games.
Okay.
I have another buddy who is into archery, big time archery shooting, competitions and stuff like that. So I'm in talks. This is an idea that's came in the last couple of months. But, you know, throwing a fighter on there. And so not only, I mean, yes, it's cool to be a sponsored athlete, whoever you are, right?
Yeah.
And you get the gear, or you know, get some prize money or whatever it is. That's cool for the athlete. But what I want to do in Intrepid is also tell their story.
Yeah.
Like where they came from, what they've did, how they got there, and what type of life they've been living, or, you know, what I like to say, the Intrepid life, and where their goals are and where they're going. Like, those are the type of people who have probably experienced some hardships, or have, you know, definitely put it in blood, sweat, and tears to get where they're at, and I want to tell their story if they want it told, because I think other people can learn from that, and other people can take pieces from that story and be like, I can apply it to my life. Let's try this and see if I can reach my goal using another person's tactics, techniques, and or, you know, motivation.
Right on. Yeah, and go ahead.
What I was going to say is, how are you going to communicate those stories? How are you going to get, like, the people who buy the shirts to know what the story is behind that shirt?
So all the Intrepid stories, and then all the athlete stories and whatnot, they're all online. There's under a section called Adventures, has the Intrepid story of how Intrepid basically came to be, and then it has all the shirt stories under that. And then if and when I do launch the athlete, sponsored athlete profiles, then I'll have a separate section for them that says, like, sponsored athletes or Intrepid athletes. And then that'll take you to their drop down, have a picture of them, have their profile, have, like, a story about them, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, one thing that I was thinking about of doing something similar to that with clothing would be if you could print the what's the little hot link that you scan on your phone?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A QR code. So if you were to be able to print, like, a small QR code on those shirts, and somebody could just walk up to it, like, in the store or whatever, they can scan it just in the corner, like, small, like, somewhere you don't even have to see it, really. Sure. Like, underneath right here, like, underneath in the armpit sleeve, where somebody can walk up and just scan it real quick, and it could just take them right to that website where it's got their story, and they'd be like, all right, cool, maybe I could buy one of these.
Yeah, for sure.
Super easy to implement, and super cheap.
I haven't thought about that on printing. That would be...
That is a good idea.
Super easy.
He does analytics for companies on, like, some pretty far out stuff, so he's super intelligent when it comes to stuff like that. I'm always... like, hey, what do you think of this?
Oh, yeah. That's that world I am lacking in.
I'm a rock, as they call, rock thrower. Want me to throw a rock at that? I'll knock it over. Yeah. That's about as far as I go.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in that same boat throwing the same rocks.
Yeah.
I'm not good at throwing, so.
That's what some of the other, like, the air side of the Army and the... they called, like, the combat arms guys or the infantry guys rock throwers because they're dumb. I'm like, that's not the case. They were usually the smartest ones out there.
Yeah, we're just away. Bored. We're bored and want to break something, so we just start throwing shit.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. The rock throwers. You learn so much cool shit like that.
Go primitive.
One of my favorite ones is you got to... where the fuck was I? I think it was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. The second time I went through boot camp, and some kid was talking to the drill sergeant about his... He had a sore throat. And he was seriously... Sounded like death. And the drill sergeant's like... Be sure you wash those dicks at night before you put them in your mouth, you little faggots, and just walk off. And the dude just had to suck it up. And I'm like, that was hilarious. Something you remember all your life. I met some, I'm sure you've had the same experience, some unique men that were just like true characters. Like the most, what do you call it, the most interesting man in the world. But these men were like, they had their own stature.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just amazed that so fucking squared away in uniform and just kind of like a, just that thought you have when you're a kid of that Rambo style dude that's just hard. I met some dudes like that and it's super cool. Because
mm-hmm.
you always pick up something from them, some funny gesture or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's cool.
So, now, are you on Amazon or anything like that?
No, right now, just basically Instagram and Facebook, and then obviously online.
So if someone wants to buy one of your shirts, where can they go?
You can buy them through like social media or just online at intrepidclothingco.com. Yeah, and then we'll do random events like here in town. Maybe in the next year, in the years to come, we'll start branching out to other states. I've got some boys, some SEAL buddies of mine that own a brewery in San Diego, so I might pop down there and do a little event with them, team up with that. You know, anyway, I can just get my name out there and start branching out and talking to more people, having people realize that it's not just a clothing line or a design. It's about stories and about telling
I love
people
it, yeah.
stories, you know?
Mm-hmm. Craft branding, I think.
We can connect that way. And then, because we all have a story. Every person in the world has a story, how they came to be, what they're doing, what they've gone through. And some stories are impressive, and others are sad, and others are just, like, mind-blowing, mm-hmm. you know? But I think that's a way that we can connect, because not all people want to tell their story to you. You know, like, I'm getting my degree in psychology, but I'm not going to be a therapist by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But not all people can just sit down and start telling you their story. Like, some come with pain and hardships. But if we can communicate those stories through artwork via, you know, clothing or a T-shirt, then they can read about that story online and other people can relate and be like, holy shit, this person survived it. This is how they did it. Or I can learn from this and be better next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a cause to it. I like that. And I think that's getting real popular. And I think kind of that craft branding, like, you can really take your own brand nowadays with social media and build it into an empire. You really can. And I personally, when I close shop, I look for shit that people don't have, like Represent LTD. I know you guys haven't heard of that. That's the Diaz brothers. But like, I look for guys that I admire, and if they have a clothing line, I'll buy their shit.
Sure.
If I like it.
Sure.
And I think it's cool because you have something that, you know, most people aren't going to know what you're wearing. But there's going to be that one dude that comes up and says, hey, I like your shirt. Mm-hmm. I know what that is, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as that becomes more and more awareness of it, you know, you can relate and be like, I've read that story. I know what that is. Or, you know, you see another design, you're like, yeah, cool. I know what you're representing and who that company is.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I love supporting veteran-owned companies, too. And there's a lot now. They're out there for sure. Black Rifle Company Co. I think they're local, right? Black Rifle Coffee
out of
Co.
Utah.
Mm.
Black Rifle Coffee, I think.
Maybe they are.
I don't know. I think they went out with Joe Rogan when he was in town here, though.
Yeah, I want to say they're from here, but maybe their headquarters is in Utah. Something goofy like
probably
that.
Probably right.
That
I don't know anything.
Brennan
about
Schaub started a big brown coffee company with them, a podcaster we listen to. But yeah, there's for veterans, if I'm telling my buddies about your clothing company, do you guys do anything for any foundations or anything like that, or are you looking into that as a new company, trying to what you want to get involved in?
Yeah, we are definitely interested in it. Most companies, basically, it would just be me writing them a check and donating, because most big companies, you have to do X amount of proceeds per year. And obviously, being a new company, we're not hitting their numbers. Their numbers are quite large. You know, like, say, Navy SEAL Foundation or something. Their numbers are well into five, maybe six figures if you're using their name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can do it other ways where we can give veterans, police officers, firefighters, nurses, teachers, we give them a discount, give them a discount code. They get that percentage off, and then all that money I will donate to such and such funds and just write them a check, basically, without marketing their name. You know what I mean?
I like that better, too. Yeah, it's cleaner.
Yeah.
It's easier to understand, too. I think there's part of the reason I asked that, an excellent answer, is there's some watered downness with some of that. I think when you, like, I've heard horror stories about Wounded Warrior, how much money actually goes to Wounded Warriors. And
right.
then, you know, so I try to encourage people to donate, like, to the Idaho Veterans Network, which is a local company or a local foundation that takes care of local guys. So, you know, like, if a dude is down and out and can't make his power bill or something, they're going to come in and hook him up.
Yeah, I'm definitely staying way local right now. I'd love to, if we ever get to a point where, you know, our followers are in the hundreds of thousands or maybe millions or something, and then the company's doing very well, then I could also look at bigger companies that have a little bit more power, more or less, to say, you know, and can do a lot with it. But especially, you know, growing up in Boise and being from here, I'm definitely going to stay local. I have friends that do my screen printing local. So I definitely want to keep it in the house for as long as I can, until once I'm at the point where I'm big enough to branch out more and nationwide or something, then I absolutely will. But for now, it's going to stay, you know, Idaho, Boise area. For different foundations,
right? Yeah, and I think
that's good.
That's the good play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's confusing, especially when you know, you're a veteran and you start a company, and it's like, all right, well, I want to give something back, but like all that, like you said, we're throwing rocks and now trying to run a company, and it's easy to go, oh, well, I'm going to donate this to the Wounded Warrior, but when you look into where the money actually goes, it's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And also, those big companies, they have enough money coming in. They're doing exceptionally well with whatever they're doing.
Yeah, so they got annual sponsorship contracts that are like through the roof, I'm sure.
So one of the events I'm trying to pull together last minute, maybe end of September time frame, is gonna be it's still very much in the early works, but it was gonna be four local clothing companies, four local nonprofits. We'll have like two, maybe three local breweries, and then one to three other, you know, local whoever, maybe a liquor rep or two, this and that. So that's an idea I have, and I want to start showcasing that every year and start bringing light to more local people and more people trying to, you know, rise up from the dirt and start something from nothing, and who are just trying to do that daily grind and make a name for themselves or for their company. So I want to spotlight more local specific companies.
Well,
and then those sales percentages all go to those four or three, four, five nonprofits that we invite.
No, maybe we can work something out together on that.
That'd be cool.
With Pro Edge Nutrition and the podcast and whatever.
For sure.
We can do a lot of stuff that way. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, we were kind of talking about earlier this summer, and it's kind of been put on the back burner, but so last minute, you know, it could be end of September, so we got, you know, a month and a half-ish or whatnot, but at least we can get something going and start it, because if you don't take that initial step and do it, you won't do it, you know. And that's what I think a lot of people are afraid of in life, is taking that leap of faith because they're scared to fail or because it might not go as planned. Well, same with my boat. Like, I got fired from my corporate America job, you know, and I said, screw that. I don't want to do that type of life anymore or have that type of job. And I've had this dream of mine since, you know, the idea was in my head back in 2009 and 10, but I really put the idea to play in 2016 on my study abroad in Australia. When I came back, that's when I got that nightmare of a job, which it was good at the time, but corporate American kiss my ass.
Yeah, I feel you.
Rolling after that, after I left, I was like, you either stop dreaming about it and move on with your life, or you do something about it. And I said, screw it, I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah,
there's no ands if or buts. It's 2 feet in. Let's see if you can sink or swim. So far, I'm still swimming. It's a horrible dog struggle paddle right now. But yeah.
But you're fighting. That's what counts, right?
Yeah, and this is the next goal and dream I want. And you just have to take that leap of faith and see what happens. And
keep even pounding.
If you fail, who gives a shit? Get back up. Try it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And try something different. Learn from your fail the first time. Try something new the second time and keep going.
Yeah, I think Joe Rogan, when he talks about discipline, I really like it. Or Jocko.
Sure.
When those guys, you listen, but like that. There's something to be said about that with the attitude. Like, it's especially when you start a business and you get out there and you're getting kicked in the nuts. Retailers don't want to pick you up, or you're doing this, you're doing that, and it's money here and money there. It's real easy to go, fuck.
Yeah.
And just see that there's no path. But like, I think he described it once, like, if you're a fucking running back and you're running into your old line and you're running into your old line and there's no hole there and you're just getting stuffed and stuffed, if you give up, you're going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be that one point where you're pounding and the opportunity opens up, and that's when you bust through.
Sure.
I think that's a good philosophy to live by and stuff like that, that it, you know, if you plant those seeds and keep planting every day, it may not seem like anything's really happening, but things will start to blossom eventually.
Sure. And the little, you know, social media meme or whatever I've seen lately is that picture of, you know, like Google, Amazon, Apple, all them, and there's a picture of a garage, you know, and it just says, you know, they all started here. And now Apple's worth $1 trillion.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying Intrepid's going to be worth $1 trillion, but what I'm saying is we all start in some type of garage. Mm-hmm. You know, mine's in my second office in my house. You know, I call it the Intrepid headquarters worldwide. You know, in my world, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but one day we take this, you know, garage
Welcome
idea.
To our studio.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how you build an empire, because it starts from the ground. You
exactly.
have to start, you have to take that leap of faith. And if you don't, you're not going to be, you're not going to have an empire worth $1 trillion. And those guys did it, and they never stopped.
Yeah, and you know what? I like your clothing line for a fighter, too. I was just thinking, because those guys, I
a lot
never,
of those guys have really cool stories.
Dude, and I didn't realize how tough of a life those guys live until they hit the payday.
Sure.
I mean, they're working. They're usually a coach, right? So they're training in boxing and Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu or whatever. Or working like a job as a waiter, or they're just, you know, picking these part-time jobs because they're training and they're pro fighters.
Full-time plus time.
And then they are beating the shit out of their bodies every day. Mm-hmm. And just the grind they go through to, I have a lot of respect for them. A whole new, and you know, coming from military and being around, you know, guys that get qualifications in this or go to that glorious school, you see a lot of squared away dudes that can go through some adversity. And being in that gym, seeing some of those guys and how they live and their story, it's phenomenal.
For sure. You know, those dudes never quit. You know, they literally take a beating and keep on ticking, and they move forward, you know, and they're chasing goals and dreams that, you know, only they can really see at that time, you know, because all of us have different goals and dreams. But once their story's told, then you can be like, holy shit, this guy's like, or this chick is getting after it.
Yeah, there's a Conor McGregor clip of him talking. He was like, pimple-faced kid. I will be in the UFC. Like, he knew it back then, and there's something to be said about that mentality.
For sure. And, you know, along the way, you're going to have haters. You're going to have people that don't believe. You're going to have people that put you down. People did that to me when I was going before I went to SEAL training.
Yeah, they want to critique you because they're
know?
Not doing.
And I just said, fuck you. You don't know the type of hate I have about losing inside of my heart and soul. You know, you don't know. It's the passion I have about winning, and then the passion I have about serving my country or doing something greater than just my life.
Yeah.
You know, and you put that drive in any person and then tell them to fail, see what happens.
Yeah, and you'd have to have that in you to make it through. But you couldn't be like, I'm going to be a SEAL and hang out and get chicks at the. If you have that mentality, like you're doing it for the glory. Like,
well, some of them do,
the
and those are the
boys.
Kids that go away.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It has to be greater than just yourself and being cool or picking up chicks or, you know, making a couple extra bucks. It has to, your why and your passion has to be greater than that.
I bet. Did you meet college football? you had, or in football in general, you had to meet some fucking outstanding coaches, right? Sometimes I hear those football guys talk, and I'm like, I'm ready to go catch a ball for them. Like, suit me up.
Yeah, some, and some make you really hate the game.
Really?
Yeah, just depends. Yeah, man, to be honest with you,
it's like that in the military. So,
you know, a lot of those guys, a lot of them are just fucking power hungry sometimes, and you put them in a coach's role, and they just want to run you to death, and there's like no reason. Like, I had a football coach. We lost a game, and he was like, "Well, 6 o'clock on Monday, we're doing 2-a-days starting at 6 a.m. and you got to be out here at 6 a.m. Monday through Thursday." And it was game week, and we did 2-a-days all week. And it's like, there's no purpose to that. Like, you're going to run us to death because we lost. True. And you're going to work us to death because we lost. And then you're going to set us up to lose again. Doesn't make any fucking sense. You know? So I think that, you know, there are a lot of coaches who are definitely leaders. And there are coaches who are more or less there for just the next step in their career, just trying to move up.
I think one thing's pretty proven, though. Guys that have gone through that type of system, whether it be high school wrestling, high school football, college football, being a Navy SEAL, doing like a you know, some stint in the military or whatever, they just have a little bit harder edge to them, I think. And I think that's fucking our society nowadays. That's super important. I was hearing Tim Kennedy talk about... I shot him a message, actually, just like, hey, I'm still interested in the 19th if you can get a waiver for an old guy. But they can't get enough guys on the Army, in active duty Army, to qualify for even the 2-week selection, the minimum physical requirements, which are not that impressive.
Sure, sure.
So they're having a hard time, and I think he was trying to explain it, and I think what I gathered from it is, you know, our society's too much of that participation trophy society now. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to see these guys that were college football players or Navy SEALs. You guys are going to kick ass in business and all that and stuff just because you have the discipline and you know that you're going to fail, but it's not going to be the end of the road. Mm-hmm. And I think in our society, there's not a whole lot of those people.
Mm-hmm. I think what in lines with that too is I get a bunch of social media messages about kids wanting to know about training and what's the magic pill and what's the secret and how do I do this, how do I do that? And my first thought is, have you done any research at all? You're like,
yeah,
I literally have 45 books from when I was 12 years old until probably 21 of SEAL training. And then, you know, the internet finally came out and it's way beyond, you know, our years when we were, you know, 12, 13, 14. But have you done any research? Because it's all on there. Mm-hmm. Everything, anything you want to know, you know, about football, hockey, you know, lacrosse, and how they train and how the pros train, it's all on there.
You can buy the fucking, what book do I have? I still have one. I think I have the Pararescues training book.
Sure.
That one of those dudes at Fletsy gave me. And it shows you every fucking workout that you're going to do at Pararescue school.
But it bugs me that they think that, like, I can just tell them a magic pill. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. I can tell you my experience and a few pointers, what I have gone through and, like, what I think is key. But you're your own person. You're your own individual. You need to find out what you're made of and what your weaknesses are yourself.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said, like, in football or in military or whatever. You're forced. There were times in your life you were forced to show up to a practice or to do this and do that, and you were put out of your comfort zone, and you didn't have a choice exactly what was going on. You were just, you had to fall in line, and I think that's important sometimes for people to...
that's how you start to learn about yourself, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Exactly.
And make yourself uncomfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that says something when, and, you know, how the fuck does Tim Kent, he's active duty still. Like, but they keep him because his notoriety. He's good for recruiting. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're going to keep him
for sure.
But what does that say when our active duty forces has so many fucking fat bodies? We can't even qualify enough to get to the first step, which is weak fucking sauce.
It is, and what we're seeing in the military is instead of holding the person accountable and telling them, hey, you either meet these standards or you're gone, we are now adjusting the standards to fit that fat body or to fit that person who can't pass it. I saw that firsthand going through BUDS, and if anyone says otherwise, it's bullshit. There's a big political game involved there, and there's some things that sometimes people cry wolf and I can't do this, so we're going to make an exception for you, or we're going to change the programming so that you can pass it.
I imagine there's been some candidates that brought some notoriety or had fathers or something, maybe. Is that kind of the road you're going down to, or maybe?
Not so much the father stuff, but kids just in general coming in, not knowing what the hell they're getting themselves into, and then all of a sudden, day three, they quit. And then you know, they go to a board and they tell the instructors why, and he's like, well, you know, they make up whatever excuse. I was in poor conditions, and no, son, you couldn't perform. You didn't know what was going on, you know, when you came into this program, which you should have done your homework, and now you're going to cry wolf. We saw that all too often, you know. And that is the type of person we're getting
breeding.
Now,
yeah.
through training. And it's a struggle to see that, and it's a struggle because they get 3-4 chances at everything already, but now some people want to give them 5-7 chances. No, that's not what the curriculum says. We're not going to bend the rules more so you have more chances, because you know what? If I give you 10 chances, you can probably pass it one time.
Yeah.
But it's not about passing it the 10th chance, you chump.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Kick rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no do-overs. Yeah, it's something I think our military is going to have to adjust fire on and figure out a solution. The solution may be they're going to have to dig deeper for candidates and start releasing those waivers on fucking old farts and guys like me or whoever that, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting, and I'm kind of glad
that realm. So I'm guessing the Navy's having a similar issue as the Green Berets.
I can only speak from kind of when I was in, and I was definitely seeing some issues like that. But I think across the board, all branches are having issues with that. Like,
yeah.
No matter what specialty you're in.
I would say so. Because you're all pulling from the same pool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
No special Russian bots coming up that I know of. God, what? I was talking Russia, and I watched, there was this fucking ass clown talking about Cold War stuff, one of those phonies, and he was talking about Nepal and like where he crossed the country, and then you pull up the map and they're not even connected, but he really went with the Russia stuff.
There was a guy that recently was in a river. I think he was out like solo kayaking out in like Alaska, and he got lost, and he got like pulled out to the sea, and he like wound up on some like eastern Russian beach, like way up north, like 55, 60 miles from where he left. Because, I mean, I think they say Alaska, the closest part between Alaska and Russia is like 55 miles or something, but I guess this dude was out at sea for like 3 days, and he washed up on this like hella northeastern Russian country. Can you imagine just showing up there and just being like, dude, where the fuck am I? Obviously, you know you're somewhere in Russia, but like,
yeah,
could have showed up in North Korea.
You could ride back, guys, find a fishing vessel.
Yeah, yeah. You could probably. Nowadays, you might be okay. Maybe, depending on who found you.
Well, they were just holding him. It was on the news, and they were just holding him, waiting because they didn't know what he was doing there. But nobody over there would probably speak English, maybe.
Dude, the Russians are fucking dirty.
Yeah, well, in that area, those are like the crazy areas of Russia. Like all of Russia's crazy, but like those are the areas where you see like bears and shit on motorcycles.
Yeah, we ran some stuff with ICE one time, some joint operations with ICE and the FBI when I was in the Coast Guard down. What happened after 9/11 is the fucking Coast Guard got so much goddamn money. We had, like, I was on the first interim Marine Security Strike Team. Sounds pretty badass, right? And we actually had all black gear. We looked fucking legit. We had these fucking fast-ass boats with machine guns. Like, we were loaded up. We were in Portland one time. This is how pissed off I was. We looked. We're all blacked out. We're on right there at the Rose Festival because of the Navy ships and stuff. That was our job, counterterrorism, whatever, for festivals. Liquid propane tankers. If one goes off, like in San Francisco, they're big ships, it would take out half the city.
Mm-hmm.
They're all propane gas. Anyway, we looked fucking badass. Really, literally no training, really little to none. We had a little bit. It was pretty sparse, though. We look special, but by all means, we would have fucked something up. There would have been innocent people killed, for sure. But We pulled up and we looked like just bad to the bone, bad as fuck. Up on the road in Portland, that they've got these Navy frigates, and I don't know if you've ever been down there where they have the Rose Festival, but the water goes right up on the walk, and there's restaurants and there's people everywhere. So we're like right there, and there's a herd of these hot chicks, and they're like, "Do you guys know where the Navy dudes are at?" They were looking for the Navy guys in the white suits, and we're like, "What the fuck?" We've got all these guns and fucking high tactical gear we don't even know how to use, and just look legit as fuck. And they're chasing some mechanic because he's got his whites on.
The whites will get him, man. Yeah. The whites will get him every time.
Dude, yeah. That's living proof right there. I'm like, what the fuck? But
this day and age, though, it'd probably be a little bit different. You see some dude all murdered out. He's either going to be a phony or he's, up to something else.
We were legit. We just didn't. I mean, it was like, they'd hit the red alarm button. Everyone was trying to figure out what the fuck to do with their. And I was in boot camp when that happened. But anyway, long story short, Russians, I didn't realize that they smuggle a ton of fucking illegal underage women in on all kinds of boats.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And Florida was so hot. They were hitting Georgia and the Carolinas and stuff because spots in the Gulf, because I think down there by Miami all the way up to Daytona Beach, I don't think you could take a leak without some type of federal agency seeing it.
Sure.
For a while anyway.
Yeah.
But they're just tattered with everything. All their sports, steroid scandals.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty money.
It's Russia.
Yeah.
Election tampering.
I met my new neighbor, and her name was Petra. She's actually kind of pretty, but she's got to be some type of... And she had the accent, too.
I hung out with a girl from Siberia a few weeks ago.
They make some beautiful women over there.
Yeah, she was...
We'll take them, right, if we just leave the dudes over there?
Yeah. Her name is Daria. She spoke really good English, but she's way the fuck up there in Siberia, and... I couldn't really put a finger on what mix she was, because when you get further north, it's almost more Asian influence in certain areas, I guess. More Mongolian.
Yeah,
area
you
got to
think Russia is
northern
ginormous.
It's huge, dude. Russia's ginormous.
So from Asia, to Europe,
mm-hmm.
and everything in between.
And Genghis Khan literally connected all that, which is crazy. That dude's interesting. That dude fucked some shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How many did he murder?
I don't know. Lots. But if you think about what he did for all of Asia, I mean, yeah, it was pretty bad. But he also connected and he integrated multiple different tribes, religions. He founded a lot of government governing principles and laws.
Silk Road, man. Silk Road connected them all.
Silk Road, yeah. But dude, he was a fucking savage. Just ruthless.
Huh.
Yeah, I read his documentary, man. I highly recommend it. There's a few of them out there, but I forget the one that I read.
Did you have anyone in your bloodline serve?
My brother went to the academy, played ball, and then went Marine Corps.
Annapolis,
mm-hmm.
Play football?
Soccer.
Soccer?
Yeah, yeah. And then my dad's side is all from Australia, so that's a different subject. My mom's side, I believe one of my aunts, her husband was a pilot in the Air Force.
Oh, right on.
Otherwise, my side of the family over here... Not too many.
Right on. Yeah, my brother was a Marine. My grandfather was in the Battle of the Bulge. That's pretty cool. He was a combat medic. Actually, I found it the other day. I have his graduating class from, I want to say it's Fort. I can't remember the fort. His medic class in 1941, it was and below his picture, there's three Japanese guys. And I was talking to my mom about it. I said, what's interesting about this? Those Japanese guys were volunteers. 3 months later, their families got taken captive by the Americans and were in intern camps. So Grandpa Wayne served with guys that had family in intern camps. And then there were guys in intern camps that ended up coming to the service. But I did the timeline on it. The Japanese families didn't start taken into custody, I don't think, till February of 1942. So when we look back on our history, there's a lot of people that, just like the Japanese Americans, that got a lot of shit, and they were fighting for our country and stuff. Isn't that nuts?
Sure, mm-hmm. They put up camps all over their country.
There was one in Rupert, yeah, mm-hmm. or Burley or Twin Falls, right in that area. Mm-hmm. But I found that fascinating that there were guys volunteering while their families, or that were serving while their families were held captive.
That's a shitty deal. It's they were fighting
for their country. Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he ended up getting trench foot and ulcers so bad they shipped him to England, and his he got picked up by an infantry unit in the 99th Infantry Division. That's where he was at. They called him the Battling Babies because they had no combat experience. They ended up on the front lines. Mm. And I think he got scooped up by an infantry company that had lost their medic. And him and another guy volunteered to go. And the field hospital they were at got overran and everyone got executed. I can't remember the name of it. I'd have to look it up. It's been a while since I tracked him, but...
Holy shit.
Our fucking grandfathers, I try to explain this, because I think I'm tough, and I've done some Army stuff out in the field where I'm like, I'm tough, but I'm like, fuck, we've got nothing on those dudes.
The boys in World War I, World War II, Vietnam, those are some hard-hitting dudes.
Have you watched the documentary Charlie Sheen narrates on Vietnam? It's on Netflix.
Not one that he has narrated.
Super good. It's about the last infantry unit that trained and deployed together. I want to say it was for the Vietnam War for sure, but it might be, I can't remember. But these guys went through basic training, AIT, and the entire deployment together. And Charlie Sheen narrates it and does a fucking amazing job. Mm-hmm. One of my most favorite documentaries on Vietnam. It was super good.
Yeah, kick ass. I'll have to check it out.
I want to say Brothers in Arms, maybe it's called.
Oh, something that's like that. The HBO one, I think. Is that the one they did like a 9-part series or something?
No, you're thinking of Band of Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. I think Brothers in Arms is the one you're talking about.
I think it's a Nat Geo one, but it's on Netflix. Okay, you haven't seen it, and it's super good. And I was, you don't think of Charlie Sheen, but dude's...
As a narrator.
Yeah, but he's super talented, and... Yeah, you got to hear those stories to know where we came from and know what guys were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And like I try to explain to people, when there's anything going on political that involves the military, you got to remember the guys wearing the uniforms, they're not making any of those decisions. Mm-hmm. They're just doing what they're told.
Mm-hmm.
And Vietnam was one of those. You watch the history on it. It's fucking insane how divided our country was and just how they treated them. And then... what was going on in the government, all crazy stuff.
Pretty interesting stuff.
But, yeah. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah.
I have a cat named Wilson.
Nice. What's Wilson up to tonight?
Mr. Wilson. He's probably outside lounging. He's very nocturnal and then sleeps all day. He's kind of like my friend Matt, who parties all night and then sleeps all day.
Hmm.
Give him a shout out, Matt.
Matt,
he's part of the Bandito crew.
What's the Bandito crew?
Just a bunch of misfits, all of us idiots running around like hooligans.
Yeah,
right on. Now, are you married, man?
No, I'm not. I'm kind of. That's kind of an interesting subject right now. There's been decisions that I've made that are changing my future in the next 9-ish months. So I'll be moving. So I have to part from my lovely lady. So we're kind of going through all of that right now.
Well, bummer.
Yeah.
But the good news is Intrepid will survive.
We are still swimming, and hopefully we'll be, mm-hmm. driving a speedboat here soon.
I'm going to rock that shirt. It's a cool shirt.
Mm-hmm.
We would have looked like total fucking douchebags if I'd have put it on. But I was excited. I guess I could have wore the hat, but that's a nice shirt. Mm-hmm. I looked at all your stuff. I'm a blue dude, but all your shirts were cool.
For sure. Thank you. And then some of the new designs, like I said, we'll coming out some all new design stories and then testing out some new threads too, some different styles of blends and whatnot that are going to be, I think, pretty top notch.
Yeah. So any of my veteran buddies out there listening, Garrett Cerny, you guys, I know that you listen. You guys are wearing all that 511 tack, all that shit. Check out Intrepid Clothing Co. I know that you guys like stuff that isn't too forthcoming about being a military brand, like the snowflake shirts and all that.
I don't really promote that I was military much at all. And my designs don't really have anything to do with the military.
It's more the principle around the shirt, which I think you guys would enjoy. So check it out, intrepidclothing.com.
Clothingco.com.
Intrepidclothingco.com.
Yeah.
Be sure to check it out. Fish, former Navy SEAL, SEAL Team 7, 9 years?
About 9 years, yep.
About 9 years. Yep. Were you in the Navy 10 or...
Navy, about 9 total.
9 total.
Yeah.
So you went to Buds right out of boot camp?
My normal Navy boot camp took me to my A school, which was storekeeper.
Storekeeper,
and that was
okay.
The shortest I had, and then I went right to Buds.
Didn't take you long to figure out you wanted to go to Buds, right?
Yeah,
they're like, you could either do this or you could be a yeoman.
Yeah.
You're like, huh?
Negative. See, I don't care what school is, as long as I got the shortest. And at the time, that was the shortest, which is, I think, 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
So I got out of Meridian, Mississippi as fast as I could, and... San Diego.
Meridian, Mississippi. That place. Yeah, that's not a... I was at Camp Shelby, Mississippi. That's my grandpa Wayne training. That's a funny story. He met my grandmother in Camp Shelby, Mississippi, when he was training to go over to the... What the fuck am I trying to say? The Western Front of Europe. That's where I did my pre-mob. Same camp as my grandpa. That's crazy, huh?
That's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Shit. I think that's all we got.
That's it, I think. Thanks for coming over, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
For sure.
Yeah, most definitely.
Hey,
I'll have you back over again on an update.
All my Coast Guard buddies, all my Army buddies, check out his shirts for reals. It's cool clothes. Support veteran-owned businesses. You guys are probably going to open up your businesses one day, and if we network and stick together and fucking help each other out, you know, we'll all go further. So Vets for Vets business. Buy some of his shirts, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the love.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Like a fat chicken dodgeball, we out.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you.